So welcome to another edition of the Media Twits. It's our year-end edition, and also our last with Rafat Ali, my co-host, who is too overwhelmed with all of his startup duties to continue, but it's kind of bittersweet.
So yeah, it is my last official show as a co-host, but of course I'll be around and will always be back whenever whenever you need somebody from the travel industry, or the media industry for that matter.
Yeah, definitely. I think we'll you know, I think we'll change the format a little going into the new year. I think we'll probably be doing them more in a kind of Google Hangout format, discussion group type thing, but I think we'll definitely rotate people in, and it would be great to still have you, you know, come on, because, you know, I'm sure our audience totally values your insight as kind of an entrepreneur and, you know, having started two media startups and just someone with such knowledge of the business.
Thanks. Yeah, no, I enjoyed it a lot. A year and a half, it just went by very quickly. Now that I'm thinking about it, I was still traveling when we first started the show. And in between traveling, I was doing the show. Sometimes I wasn't available because I was traveling. And then the work, my new startup Skift, is just taking up all of my time. So it's been increasingly difficult to pull away in the middle of the day to do it. So unfortunately, I'm stepping away, but not too far.
Yeah, we hope not. And so what's the latest on your, are there things you can talk about with your startup, how it's gone so far?
Yeah, I mean, we're years ending. So for us, we've been in existence for a little over four months now. So as official launch, since launch. So it's been amazing. November was amazing for us. December is going quite well. And lots of new product stuff to come. We'll start building in revenues early next year.
Well, that's when things get really interesting, I guess, when you bring in revenues.
Yeah, no, right now everything is possible. It's still possible. But I think the next few months, especially January, February, March, is going to be very crucial for us because we're now beginning to break through in terms of the reach, in terms of brand, in terms of traffic. So now we got to take it to the next level from here.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we'll be talking about on this show and on Media Shift, we've got a whole special around ebooks and kind of the changing book publishing world. And I know it's a subject we've touched on many times on the show in the last year. And we had this big show where we talked just about Amazon, which was interesting. And I know you're a huge Amazon fan. I mean, Where do you stand with your ebooks? Are you still reading print versus ebooks? I mean, I've gone back and forth. Like, I got really into ebooks for a while, and now I'd say I'm much more into print.
Really? I'm still reading ebooks, and that's primarily the thing. Once in a while, if something is not available in print in ebooks, which is rarer and rarer now, then I'll pick up a book. Of course, reading a book is a much more peaceful experience than reading an ebook. It's just a fact of life. I'm guessing maybe that's kind of your motivation on back and forth.
Yeah, because I was reading ebooks for a while. I had a Kindle, and that was a different experience. And then I was using my iPad, and you know, it is a different experience in just being on a screen and always being on either a computer screen or an iPad screen or an iPhone screen or whatever. There's a screen all the time, or TV, that you know, having the book experience, it is more peaceful. It's true. It's like you can lay in bed and read a book, or you can be out at a cafe or on a trip. I mean, travel was really the reason why I liked ebooks so much in the first place, is because it's just so easy to carry around the Kindle and have the books you want right with you without having to take up your entire suitcase.
Yeah, I mean, that was my entry into Amazon Kindle when it first came out. And then I traveled with it to India for the first time, I remember, I think December of whatever year that was. And I must have read like 5 or 6 or 7 books in those 2-3 weeks I was in India with family. And that was the start of it. Yeah, so it's traveled usually, or just my world travels since 2010. I've read a lot, not just on Kindle, but Kindle app on iPhone, Kindle app on iPad, and of course six Kindles. I've had six. This is my sixth Kindle. So
wow, you could have a whole Kindle museum.
Well, no, because I've either lost a few or broken few. So yeah,
the museum of broken Kindles.
Or lost, yes.
But yeah, for traveling, I mean, it just makes so much sense. I've noticed in doing kind of business trips and things and going to Europe, you know, a while ago when they first came out, you'd see, you know, like the Sony reader and some of the early kinds of e-readers crop up here and there. And now I feel like, I mean, you go on an airplane and you just walk down the aisle and, I mean, people are on every type of screen imaginable, but you definitely see so many e-readers.
Yeah, I mean, it's become the lingo, really. Look at the New York subway people reading. And it's, these days it's hard to tell which Kindle, which ebook is which, because they're sort of blackish gray, similar size screens. Some may have some buttons, some won't. So you can't really tell unless you're looking closely.
Right.
On the kind of ebooks that people are using, but it's surely Kindle is the dominant one still.
Definitely. All right, well, we'll bring in our kind of round table of guests. So now our round table discussion beyond the book 2012. Ebooks have gone from a curiosity to a techie favorite to a mainstream need over the past few years. We know they'll eventually surpass print books in consumption, but what does the future hold? And what about the publishing business? It's been disrupted in a big way, so what's their best bet to make for the future? In fact, numbers show, according to Amazon, that in the UK now, ebooks sales have surpassed print sales for Amazon within 2 years of the launch of the Kindle there, and that took 4 years to happen in the US. Joining us is Joe Weichert, General Manager, Publisher, and Chair of the Tools of Change TOC Conference at O'Reilly Media. Prior to O'Reilly, he was Vice President and Executive Publisher at John Wiley & Sons in their Professional and Trade Division. Welcome, Joe.
Thanks, Mark. Great to be here.
We also have Jason Allen Ashlock, who's co-founder of Movable Type Management, a literary production company that fosters storytelling across platforms, devices, territories, and generations. Welcome, Jason.
Hi, guys.
We also have Miral Sitar, who's founder and CEO of BiblioCrunch, a platform that matches authors and publishers with quality award-winning professionals to get new books and apps to market. She's worked in the media industry for 11 years, most recently at Time Magazine, where she launched digital initiatives. Welcome, Miral.
Hi. Thanks, guys, for having me.
Sure. So let's start with you, Joe. You're at O'Reilly, where, you know, it's a book publisher that's known for being very new age, very digitally savvy, very open source. Where do you guys stand when it comes to kind of ebooks and printed books? Obviously, you're going to try to be everywhere, but where do you see this going as a publisher?
Yeah, so, and you're right, Mark. I mean, print is not going away anytime soon, so we produce all of our content in print as well. We have shifted, though, I will say, to mostly a print-on-demand model. So in the past, when we would do thousands of copies in offset and have them sitting around a warehouse, that's largely been shifted to print-on-demand as the prices have come down. But as far as ebooks are concerned, I think you're right to point out that O'Reilly has generally been very much ahead of the curve, certainly when it comes to things like digital rights management or DRM. I mean, we've been DRM free from the start, and a lot of people kind of look down their noses at that, and a lot of those same people are finally kind of seeing the light and realizing that DRM is just really an inconvenience to your loyal customers and really does nothing to solve the piracy problem. But I also think probably the biggest opportunity with ebooks is an opportunity for publishers to create a direct relationship with their readers. And so we've been able to do that extensively by selling direct on O'Reilly.com. And we offer benefits, and we also offer really a community setting there that draws people in, because you can't simply put an e-commerce system in place and expect everybody to buy from you instead of Amazon. So the community is a big piece, as well as when people buy direct from us, they get all formats, so it works on every device they have.
And, you know, with the rise of all this self-publishing, I know we've talked about this before on our show and previously on Media Shift. You know, there's this question of, you know, what is the role of a publisher now in the digital age? You know, it's a shifting role. Is it a role where, you know, we talked about this even in the music business, you know, would record labels disappear because musicians can just go straight to their fans? There's this whole direct to fan kind of relationship. I mean, do you see that as kind of a threat to what you're doing?
Absolutely, but I think that there's a lot of lessons for us to learn from that too. So, you know, one of the things I've counseled some of the folks I know in the industry is don't write off your authors who have gone the self-publishing right now. You need to engage with them and understand what they've learned and why they may like that over traditional publishing. I've spoken with a number of ours, including Scott Birkin, and as he told me in an interview we did for TOC, he feels like he wants to kind of participate in both camps going forward. There are times when he doesn't mind taking on more of the work and having it be self-published, but there are other times when he really values what the publisher brings to the table. But the bottom line here is that traditional publishers have got to rethink their value proposition and really clearly state what it is that they bring to the table that an author wouldn't be able to get on their own through self-publishing.
That makes a lot of sense. And Jason, tell us about what your kind of literary production company is. My guess is that it's kind of a new version of a literary agent. How has kind of that role changed for, you know, the literary agents always traditionally were kind of a gatekeeper role. If you were an author starting out, you would kind of pitch your stuff to agents who would then kind of take it to the publisher. How has that equation changed lately?
Well, to some degree, it's stayed the same among many of my colleagues and many of my fellow agents. They're still, you know, as long as a good percentage of the industry keeps doing what it's doing, then that portion of the industry will still get serviced. And so agents will continue to do what they have always done in finding talent and prepping it and sharing it with the appropriate buyers at the big publishing companies. But, you know, I get asked a lot if the role of the literary agent is under threat, or if, you know, the literary agent is still relevant in today's world. And I think, yeah, it's under threat. And my answer to the relevance question, given what I do for a living, often surprises people. And that is that I don't know that the literary agent is so relevant anymore, by which I mean the literary agent in the form that we've come to define it. The talents that the literary agent brings and the role that the literary agent plays in the life of an author are important. But when everybody on either side of the agent, when their roles shift and when their definitions become more fluid, then as a mediator, the agents by default gets changed too. And so what we've tried to do is, I mean, we have the benefit, my firm does, of having been born into this upheaval. So rather than having been formed 20 years ago and now trying to adapt ourselves, we've sort of come into our own in the middle of this shifting period. And so we've come to define ourselves as radical mediators, meaning that if agents in the past have merely mediated between the creator, the author, and the buyer, the publisher, when those roles shift, we want to mediate on behalf of the author with everybody. And it so happens that with the new tools and opportunities that authors are given to publish and to distribute and to market on their own, that really a lot of what we find ourselves doing is mediating between the author and the readers, helping an author find his or her audience and produce products, digital and print, that would be appealing to that audience. And a lot of times that involves the traditional publishing house, but a lot of times it doesn't. And I think the agent of the future is an agent that doesn't look to always sell rights to big publishers, but an agent who looks at the author, looks to find the audience, and plays whatever role is needed as a middleman between those two groups.
And Maral, talk about what BiblioCrunch kind of brings to the table as kind of a new platform, because we hear a lot about, you know, there's self-publishing platforms, there's, you know, kind of ways to help authors create ebooks, there's self-publishing tools. I mean, we're almost awash with so many different tools and platforms. It's for, I think, for a starting out author or agent or publisher, kind of someone even just starting up in the world, it's almost intimidating to figure them all out.
Yeah, so our platform, actually, the Bonaire Contour Service, is a platform that connects authors and publishers with quality book publishing professionals. So we have about 500 vetted, rated, and reviewed professionals who can help you from aspects of cover design, editing, illustrations, marketing, app development, anything you need in the production process that's involved in the book. And like you said, it is confusing for authors. So a service that we just rolled out in the summer is the Author Concierge Service, which is just for authors specifically, especially first-time ones who don't know the landscape very well, who don't know how much money they should spend, so we kind of guide them through the publishing process. And we have traditionally published authors who come to us to use that service who aren't getting much marketing for their books from their publisher, and want to spend some of their own money, and then we get a lot of self-published authors using that service.
This is a debate that's playing out, of course, in all industries. In the book industry, is just a lot faster because it was one of the fastest industries to go digital, because it's one of the last industries to go digital. So in terms of what role, like let's say in the magazine industry, increasingly on the way to becoming clear what magazines will survive in 5 years, 10 years time, newspapers, even sometimes even in a shorter time frame than that. What role do you think so print books, what in 10 years, what form of print books will we be able to buy?
But the magazine question in particular, there was an announcement today that New York Times is now going to start selling ebooks. And that's definitely a move in the right direction. They have the quality content, and they're doing it based on the archives that they already have. Cosmo is also publishing ebooks now too, and it's just a natural step for publishers for another way to earn revenues. Because people aren't people aren't paying for content online, but they're used to paying content for books. So I think you'll see a lot more of publishing houses merging with print or print magazines and newspapers to actually put out books.
Yeah, I think what's interesting and I think appropriate about what Meral just said is she was referring to pretty well-known brands, right? And that's something we've been talking a lot about on the PFC platform is what sort of a brand has a publisher created over their life? And the reality is nobody walks into a store looking for the next book published by Random House, right? But, you know, where I work, we happen to have built up a really great brand recognition and following with our readers, and they do oftentimes look for the next book on a technology from O'Reilly. So I think the really big question longer term for publishers is, what role are they going to play in the brand recognition that's out there? Because typically, depending upon what genre you're talking about, it's the author that's the brand. Sometimes it's a series that's a brand, and probably even fewer cases, it's maybe an imprint that's a brand. But when you start thinking about the future of print as well as the future of digital content, I think it's going to be more and more important for publishers to establish a household brand name so that they're not as dependent on the middleman retailers.
That makes sense.
So I guess that's a license for media companies who traditionally have not been book publishers, like Meral was just saying, New York Times and stuff, are anytime, or even brands. I know there's a huge hype about brands as content creators and curators and all this wave that's been coming over the last year or two. I guess the next iteration of that would be brands themselves getting into books directly.
Absolutely. And I think Meral was talking a bit about that. In fact, USA Today, I think, just published their first ebook. So here you have a really well-known brand name that is known for a certain type of content delivery, and now they're kind of shifting formats. It may be called a quote-unquote book, but it's really just a digital piece of content.
And Jason, did you have a thought about kind of the future of print books too? I mean, is there a certain design or something? I mean, is it the kind of thing where people think of books as more you know, an art more artistic, more kind of high quality, something that's going to set it apart from an ebook?
Yes, I think you nailed it. What's very interesting about publishers being confronted with the crisis that's before them, watching, as Rafat said, sort of this vertigo-inducing rush towards everything going digital, is that print now feels like something that has to be earned. It used to be the default mode. There was a book, an intellectual property that formulated itself as a novel or a piece of long-form writing, and it wanted to be born into the market, and print was the default mode. And when we built these beautiful physical containers to hold all of that content that fit that model. But now, instead of digital is the default. Digital is the democratic space where anyone and anything can be shared openly. And now print is something that you have to sort of prove you have the right to do. You have to bring an audience to the table, which is what the brand conversation, I think, is about. Or the work itself has to really require a print version of itself. Whether that's a design element that has to be in place in that book, you know, you think of illustrated or photography books or cookbooks, even that, whose physicality is tied in very, very tightly with its content, or high-end editions for buyers of certain authors or brands that wish to collect these artifacts, or perhaps. Going the other direction, sort of niche markets where people turn to micro presses or small presses in their region or their community to produce print versions of books that mean something to that world and to that context. But in any of these cases, I do love the fact that we get to look at the content now and say, how do you best deserve and best want to be born? Rather than all of us defaulting to, well, it has to be a physical book, we now get to distinguish. And I think in the future, we'll make far better choices about what gets printed on paper and bound with wood and pulp and placed on a shelf. And that only brings, I think, greater value to the idea of the physical book rather than detract from it as so many fear.
That's a good point. And what about the ebooks themselves in that format? It feels like... you know, people have tried some, you know, we've always thought about the potential of ebooks to have so much enhancements and have multimedia and have all these kind of extra features. And we've seen some here and there. I don't know that there's been really a breakthrough in that. And I don't know if, you know, I mean, what do you guys see coming when it comes to the ebook format itself?
Well, just, you know, I don't want to speculate on what kind of breathtaking developments will take place, but what I will say is I think we have to kind of step back and realize where we are on the timeline here. And one of the analogies I like to use is that you know, the early stage of television shows were nothing more than radio programs in front of a camera, and that's kind of where we are today. And in fact, 90%+ of the revenue that book publishers are getting from ebooks these days is really nothing more than the quick and dirty print to e conversions, or print under glass, as some folks have referred to it.
Right.
And there has been experimentation. There's been experimentation with different formats and platforms and so forth. I haven't seen anything that really looks like it's going to stick, but I do feel that longer term, rather than having a app or platform specific product like on iOS or Android, or even having the format wars of EPUB versus MOBI, that HTML5 is really going to win the day, and that we're going to find ways of expressing and consuming rich content just through the browser type interface.
This is Jason, and Joe and I are exactly on the same page with this, in my opinion. The devices and the file formats have really limited what's possible and what makes any sense for publishers to invest in. Although obviously there have been multimedia experiences that have been fun to talk about but haven't seemed to have much commercial success. And I think that's due to the device and format constrictions. But I'm a big believer that the web and the book are on their way to merging to a much deeper and better degree than what we have now. And HTML5 is a great step in that direction. And as soon as that happens, I think we'll begin to see some really interesting products that aren't quite books and aren't quite web, but are the optimized elements of both. And right now, we just don't have the devices or the capability across the market to make many of those or to make them well.
And Maral, in your service, do you see authors You know, are there a lot of services that you're kind of working with to kind of help authors create richer ebooks?
Yeah, we're pointing them towards, like if they don't have a budget, we point them towards guides and do-it-yourself stuff that they can do on their own. Actually, and not surprisingly, a lot of cookbook authors come to us and they put videos inside their book, which I think is a natural pairing. Is my biggest issue with cooking in the U.S. is if you read it, they really don't know the technique, and then they're actually putting their technique video into the book, so it's kind of like a neat compliment. You see that with exercise books too, or any type of book where they're trying to demonstrate something or teach something. I think you'll see a lot of that, the video and the text integration there, because some things you just can't read, you have to watch them.
And that's what I was going to say. The children's books are probably at the forefront of being reinvented or reimagined in formats that would then could become standard in a lot of other parts of the book industry, because they're being reimagined as not just any kind of things to read, but to interact with, to play with, learning, sort of all the things mixed in that I guess will become standard part of books down the line.
Yeah, and you can see with kids' books, you know, having the kind of text-to-voice stuff really makes sense, and having more interactivity, and it really is almost a convergence of a game, a reading, you know, all these different things, kind of in one ebook, you know, like the Yellow Submarine ebook, and I'm sure there's others like that, you know, that are combining music and video and tech, you know, voice text-to-voice and all these other things.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, the two categories that we're talking about now, children's books and cookbooks, are two categories that, even in their physical form, required a kind of interactivity, much more so than reading a full-length novel or reading a long work of investigative journalism or a memoir. There was a touch and feel and mark and interact with component to reading even the physical editions of those. So it makes sense that their transition to digital would spur people's creativity to find ways to make the most of the devices and the file formats and the platforms to create interactive experiences that are even taking us beyond what the physical book was capable of. What will be interesting will be to see if in the next few years we find a way of making any kind of interactivity helpful or beneficial or augmenting in any betterment way when it comes to the novel or to long form work.
No question. Well, thanks a lot for joining us. Really appreciate it. We know there's some events coming up soon in New York. Digital Book World is coming up in January, and then the Tools of Change O'Reilly Conference is happening in February, and Book Squared is happening in February. So there's a lot going on this winter, and you know, we're hoping with Media Shift to be involved in that. We also have a week-long special all about Beyond the Book that's going to be happening next week on Media Shift. So definitely be sure to check that out.
That's great. And can I just say one thing, Mark? All the conferences that you just mentioned are themselves, I think, really demonstrating the shift that the industry is undergoing. I mean, every one of those conferences used to be very insular and very internal for the book world, and every one of them has made huge revisions to their presentation and to the structure of their conference to welcome authors and to equip authors and to provide programming that teaches authors how to make the most of the technology and tools that we have available now. So if you want to sort of see a lot of this industry shift taking place in real time, it's happening at these events that you just mentioned.
Yeah, and Joe can even talk about there's this Author Revolution Day that you guys are doing at TOC as well.
Yes, and we're super excited about it. I think that was a great lead-in, because we have felt for too long that TOC has been aimed exclusively at the publishing professional, and the author space, especially in the self-publishing world, is exploding. So we wanted to really kind of tailor content for that audience, and so that's what Author Revolution Day is. It's the day before the main event for TOC, so it takes place on February 12th. And if you want to register, you can find more information at toccon.com.
Even got a little plug in.
Indeed. I set him up. It was alley-oop joke. Nailed it.
Well, thanks a lot. Go ahead, Miral.
Oh, I was going to say, I was going to put in my plug in too.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
So we're part of a conference called Indie Recon, and it's the title is Making Indie Publishing a Mission Possible. So it's a two-day free conference that a bunch of self-published authors are putting together, and it's just by authors, for authors, and it'll teach you everything from A to Z.
And where's it going to be taking place?
It's virtual, so it's everything's online.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for joining us, everyone.
Yeah, thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, have a great holiday season.
Yeah, happy holidays, everybody.
You too. Everyone. Take care, everybody.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift. I want to thank and bid a fond farewell to my co-host, Rafat Ali. I also want to thank our guests, Joe Weichert, Miral Sattar, and Jason Allen Ashlock. We want to thank PBS and the Knight Foundation for making this podcast possible. Be sure to keep up with all the news, polls, and events over at PBS Media Shift at pbs.org/mediashift, and our sister site, Idealab, at pbs.org/idealab, and our new site, Collaboration Central, at collaborationcentral.org. This is our last show of the year, so please have a happy holiday season and a happy new year, and we'll be back in the new year with a new format for Media Twits. Take care. Brings everyone